Do you think your life would be better if you had fewer choices? I mean, we talk about this notion of multiple choices and that being a good thing, not multiple choice. I hate multiple choices. Exams. They're archaic. It's ridiculous. Nevertheless, we talk about the benefit of having lots of choices and options and the power and autonomy that comes from that. But is it really better? I mean, marketers talk about, you know, come on down. We have, you know, hundreds to choose from. They never say, you know, come on down. We got like two choices. That's all you get. Nobody says that. But we see this benefit of having more choices. We think that that's a good thing, that that's an element associated with, you know, free will. And being able to do whatever you want, get exactly what you want. But is it really better? There's a lot of research about choice. And what's interesting is that we make about over 30,000 what researchers would call remotely conscious decisions in a day. And a couple hundred of those, by the way, are related to food. Where we eat, what we eat, how we eat it, who we're eating with, what we're eating with, whether it be like a fork or whatever. I mean, hundreds of choices just related to food. But it's also what we wear, what we want to accomplish, what we want to do socially, what we want to do with our money. Do we want to spend it? Do we want to save it? If we're going to spend it, where are we going to spend it? If we're going to save it, where are we going to save it? What are we going to do in our work? Do we need to bring an umbrella? And it's exhausting cognitively, right? So we've talked on the podcast a lot about this notion of cognitive workload. And by the way, all those choices I just mentioned, that has nothing to do with some of the big choices that we make. You know, the big choices that comes to, you know, who's going to be our mate? Where are we going to live? How many children are we going to have? All those different things too. So it's a high level of cognitive workload that goes into choice. Think about going into a pharmacy and looking at toothpaste. I always use toothpaste as an example. How many brands of toothpaste are there? How the hell can you decide which is better than the other? None of them say, because I've looked, none of them say, this really isn't a good choice. You know, this is for people who just don't want the best for their teeth. They're all great. And some of them, not only are they great, but they're new and improved. And with so many other things, the people look great that are using it. Look at beer commercials. Nobody's overweight on that beach. Right? Maybe I need to drink more beer. I don't know. Alexander Pope once said, "Blessed is he who expects nothing, for he shall never be disappointed." There's a lot to that, right? There's a lot to it when it comes to this, because we have more choice than we think that there's a higher level of expectation relative to what that outcome's going to be. If I have a million choices, doggone it, one of them is going to make me happy. One of those Tinder swipes, because there are hundreds and thousands of them, what are there, 1.2 billion swipes a day. I think that's the latest number. I don't want an angry letter from Tinder. But it's a lot. I think it is. I think that's around the number. Oh my gosh. Well, one of those is going to be the perfect mate for me. They're going to look right. They're going to have the right job. I'm going to enjoy being around them. All those different things. And that's probably true. You probably could. If you're going to sort through all of that, you may find the perfect individual. How long that's going to take you? I mean, it would take forever, right? It reminds me of the joke of the, you know, the guy that was looking for the perfect woman, and he searched for years and years to find her. He went all over the world looking for her, and he finally found her. There she was. What a great moment, right? Unfortunately, she was looking for the perfect man. Nevertheless. So if we had decisions made for us, maybe our lives would be a little bit better. You know, Skinner talked about B.F. Skinner. I read about B.F. Skinner. He was one of the most influential psychologists in the last century. And a lot of his work has been debunked, but his work is fun. I mean, it's fun now. And you could read about numb. I talk about the pigeons. I love talking about the fact that he was able to get government money to fund pigeon-guided missiles. I made it work. And you can go on YouTube, by the way, and watch, recorded video of the pigeons with these little electrodes on their beaks. And they're pecking through what's called operant conditioning, right? Operant conditioning, you get a reward for something, so you keep doing it. And basically, they were, you know, he trained them by pecking at videos of ships to get the food, and then eventually was going to put them into an actual missile and use that. And then eventually, I think it was in the early 50s, we discovered, whatever we discovered, missiles that were guided by radar, or guided by, I should know what this is, but I don't. Somebody will email me. Saved a lot of pigeons. But the point of that was that he was able to say, look, you get a reward, you're going to repeat that. That's an element of operant conditioning. Same thing with punishment, too, by the way. You get someone to stop doing something. But he said, relative to going back to where we are at this point, is that essentially we don't make any decisions. The environment makes them for us. Now think about that for a second. It's kind of fascinating in some regard, right? We don't make any decisions. The environment makes them for us. And you can think about big decisions that you've made throughout your life, whether it's a job, whether it's a mate, where you live, whatever it might be, there is some truth to that. Some. So going back to this notion of choice and what our lives maybe be better if choices were made for us, think about marriages. So the latest data suggests that around our divorce rate is somewhere, in the United States that is, it's somewhere between 40 and 50%. For arranged marriages where the parent is somehow involved, the divorce rate is 4%. How do you explain that? 40 to 50% when you have free will and choice. Although, again, Skinner would say you don't have free will. All right, but for the purpose of what we're doing here, whatever we're doing, we'll say you have a choice. And the divorce rate's 40 to 50%. If you don't have a choice and you're in an arranged marriage, the divorce rate is 4%. In India, where I think it says that there's 90% of the marriages are arranged, the divorce rate is only 1%. And by the way, 50% of the marriages around the world are arranged. You don't need Tinder. So if somebody says Tinder's in every country, they're full of it, right? I mean, if you got a country that's only doing arranged marriages, well, I guess people could be doing things on the side. Nevertheless. So when we have more choices, we have this notion called expectation disconfirmation. And it's a big component of choice overload. Because, as I said, the more options we have to choose from, the more confident we are that somewhere we're going to find what fits what we want, what we need exactly. So it creates this higher expectation. And going back to Alexander Pope, when we have a higher expectation, then we're disappointed. And you can see how that can be an issue in almost everything we do in Western society, when it comes to dating, when it comes to buying toothpaste, when it comes to anything on Amazon or anything at the grocery store, and the thousands of items that we have in a grocery store, the thousand decisions we make a day. So we have that element of choice overload. We can be paralyzed, right, when it comes to making choices. The fable of Buridan's ass is a donkey. It's not a story about anatomy. Buridan was a French philosopher back in the 1200s, so that would be the 13th century. And the story is that the donkey was equidistant between, I wrote about this in the book, raise your hands if you've read this. He was a philosopher. The donkey was in between two equidistant piles of hay. I don't know if there was water there or not, but there was hay. And the donkey couldn't decide which stacks of hay to choose from, so the donkey starved to death. Which is, you know, an interesting fable about this element of choice paralysis of donkeys, but also applies to us humans. So we can become very much paralyzed. And you could see that in a lot of different things, right? People just see so many options at them in the store, and they just say, I don't know. They all seem so similar, so I just don't bother. There's a great study that happened right around 2000. It was researchers from Stanford and MIT, I believe. I'll post it. That looked at consumers relative to choice and found that if it was jam in a grocery store, and they gave out coupons to individuals that would come to the jam stand, and they could, you know, redeem the coupon to buy, I don't know, like a discounted jar of jam. And what they found was there was one with 24 options and one with 6. There were more people bought jam when there were only 6 options than they did when there were 24 options. And we see that in a lot of different other areas. And there's an element of regret. We'll get to the regret in a second. But we see that also in like 401k contributions, for those of you advisors out there, right? So less options, less choices, or automatic enrollment when it comes to 401k, right? And choice architecture is, you know, kind of emanates from that area, that line of research, right? So you're trying to get people to make decisions. You make it simple, and you pare down those decisions. Here are the choices. You choose one. You have to choose amongst 15 different options. You don't know what to do, but if you got 3, you can cognitively, you can get there. It makes a lot more sense to make a decision. It makes it easier cognitively to do that. When it comes to choice, we essentially fall into 2 categories. We are satisficers and we're maximizers. And this is, if you're interested in reading more, this is Herbert Simon's work. He won the Nobel Prize a while back. And he talked about, you know, a satisficer is somebody who, I know what I want, I know what I need, I know what I'm willing to pay for it or sacrifice. And once you find it, you're done. That's it. I got it. It met my threshold. I'm moving on. A maximizer wants to go through every possible option. They're going to do all the research. They're going to test drive all the cars. They're going to look at all the possible apartments. They're going to read all the Amazon reviews. And what tends to happen with the maximizers is they tend to experience more regret over whatever they decide, whatever they choose. I should have, you know what? I didn't do the right option. And there's lots of research on this. I don't make up anything. But the maximizer will basically, you know, think about the other options and experience far more regret. So what can we do about it? Well, we could do a lot of things. The first thing we could do is give us ourselves a time frame by which we're going to make a decision. So I got to buy a new laptop. And don't buy a laptop now. Supply chain, they don't have any laptops. I was at Apple Store yesterday. I went all the way uptown. They have nothing. They went through the whole thing. I spent 25 minutes there and finally decided, yeah, this is the one I want. They said, oh, we don't have any. We have nothing. What about the one we're looking at now? Oh, no, we can't give you that one. I digress. But give yourself, if you're looking for a laptop or anything, for example, give yourself a time period by which you're going to make a decision. I'm going to look at anything I want to look at for the next 2 weeks. But at the end of next week, I got to buy. And then secondly, for the most part, with most decisions, not the huge, huge, huge ones, but with most, make your choice final. So this goes back to some of the regret, right? This is what I'm going to decide, and then I'm moving on. So I'm not having this element of regret. And, you know, there are lots of connections, too, when it comes to this idea of choice overload and regret and the anxiety, that depression can be part of that, right? You know, and I write in the book, social media, you know, especially when it comes to things like FOMO and all these curated things that we see from other people, what better place to go to not only, if you know, be overwhelmed with choices, but be reminded of past choices, whether they were the right ones or not, right? Oh, look at this person. I should have done that. I was going to do that. And I didn't do it. Look at their life. It's so much better now, right? Now, I say most things because in some regards, some decisions are just so big and overwhelming for some people that you have to practice just a little bit of grace. That's a word that came in from one of our emails today, which I'll get to later. You know, if you're looking at changing jobs and you're just overwhelmed by the thought, should I do this or not? You know, in some regards, you have to say to yourself, you know what? If this doesn't work out, I'm going to undo it. I might not be able to go back to where I was, but I'm going to leave. I'm not going to stay and be miserable. So, you know, you in some regard with these big decisions, you got to say, you know, it's not the end of the world. If this isn't the right move, it's not the end of the world. Now, that should not apply to toothpaste, okay? You can't say, well, you know, I'm going to, I don't know. You lose your mind. But for big things, I think there's an element of grace that we can have to help us. And the last thing that a lot of therapists talk about is this notion of practicing gratitude. That if we're grateful for what we have, it can actually help us when it comes to elements of choice overload. That we basically, we value what we have and we're going to decide based upon what information we have available at that given time, kind of gets back to this environment thing with Skinner. And we're gonna do the best we can. We're gonna make a decision. We're happy we've had these options and we're gonna move forward. I still think that if we had some of these choices made for us, I think we'd be better off. You could think about that notion of arranged marriages versus us deciding at the divorce rate. I know I'm going to get lots of emails about that, and I'm looking forward to furthering that discussion. I'm glad that you made the choice to listen today. Back in a second. The NUMB podcast is supported by WeLearn. Learning is a good thing. WeLearn is on a mission to help organizations build better humans through learning. It provides a full range of services to assist its partners in building world-class learning and a world-class workforce. WeLearn is also the recipient of 3 coveted bronze Brandon Hall Group Awards. Check out their blog for content on learning, development, training, and more at welearnls.com/blog. That's WeLearn, WeLearnls, all one word there, .com/blog. This is the NUMB podcast. I'm Dr. Charles Chafin. NUMB, 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 NUMB. Well, that will almost do it for this episode of the NUMB podcast. But before we go, I should certainly mention, you've got a nice white dress and a party on your confirmation. You've got a brand new soul and a cross of gold. But Virginia, they didn't give you quite enough information. You didn't count on me. You were counting on your rosary. That's Billy Joel, right? Only the good die young, 1977. Well, he was really pushing hard. I mean, he was taking a swing with the bat there with Virginia. Nevertheless, you can get the Numb Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Audible, or wherever else you get your podcasts. And of course, if you get this show through Apple Podcast, I hope you will leave me a review. Two emails today. First is from Lydia in Toronto. Love Toronto. That CN Tower is scary, though. Anyway, people are behaving badly. It seems like drivers are worse and rude. I had parenthetically. You got that right. I really appreciate you and Linda talking about how fear may play a role in that. Perhaps we should all practice a little grace and patience with others. I couldn't agree more, Lydia. It's not easy right now, but it does just, as we talked about in that episode, it does feel like folks are just on edge. And there is something about that, knowing that it's fear, whether maybe knowing it in ourselves or our partners, but it's also helpful knowing it with others, and maybe we can be a little more patient. Unless they almost run you over with a dirt bike in the middle of Midtown Manhattan. But I digress. The second email is from Janet from Tennessee, somewhere in Tennessee. I love the podcast. You mentioned a few times that the two most popular episodes are porn and loneliness. There's a connection there, she says. Well, thank you for the email, Janet. That hasn't necessarily been what the research shows, right? That you know, this idea that, okay, well, if people are watching porn and doing whatever activities that are associated with that, if I go any further, I have to click the button that says children can't listen, and I hate to, you know, click that button. But you know what I'm talking about. I'll click it anyway, because the kids are going to ask, what activities are you talking about? So that this idea that if people are watching porn, they're not going to go and, you know, meet people and have romantic relationships. But the research doesn't show that. It doesn't necessarily show that. And we talked about that on the episode, that that's not necessarily the case. Now, there is some, you know, the talk, and I wrote about this in a book, that, you know, when porn became far more available in the 90s, less friction, right? You didn't have to go to the store or a video store to get porn. You could watch it free online. You know, there were lots of people that said, well, now that it's more readily available, there's going to be more sexual violence. And that actually wasn't the case. It was actually quite the opposite there. So there is some data relative to that. So Janet, I'll gently push back on that notion. However, I will thank you again for the email, but I also think, too, kind of tied back to this element of choice, I think, you know, you can see a connection there, right, between choice overload and loneliness, that there's some element there. And certainly these are complicated matters, but this idea of just being overwhelmed with choices, or feeling like, especially if we're talking about like dating apps in particular, that we're always looking for the ideal, and we meet, and it's a one person that you're meeting versus an entire field, and you meet that one person, and actually they're human, which means they may have flaws, or maybe they don't have a curated look about them in person like they did in their profile. You could kind of see that connection there, right? But thank you for the email, Janet. You could email me at thenumpodcast@gmail.com, and I hope you will. I love the emails. I'm not able to answer all of them. Some of them I answer individually without reading on other podcast episodes, but I really appreciate the emails. And with that, thank you for listening. And a reminder, if you're not where you are, you're nowhere. See you later.